This is the Bloom Pod, and I'm Taylor Onion.
And I'm Melissa Lutz.
Each episode, we bring you an interview with an everyday person who is chasing big dreams. I interview the guests for the first part of the show, and then Melissa and I come together and recap some of the main points at the end.
With the occasional shenanigan.
This week's guest is an associate professor at Kansas State University. She has research interests in intercollegiate athletics, advising and developing student athletes, the changing environment of college athletics, NCAA reform, and women in intercollegiate athletic administration. She does so many things. Please enjoy our conversation with Dr. Lisa Rubin. Awesome. Dr. Rubin, I am so excited to have you on today. We're in our higher education block. You are rounding out our higher education block, our last guest in that category. But like I said, I'm excited to have you on. You've established yourself, you know, as not only a professional in higher education, but as a professional in the space of kind of that intersection of college athletics and academics and higher education and where that all meets. So a lot of crossover with sport and college athletics and higher education with you, but I would love to just kick things off by having you share a little bit more about your journey up to this point.
Thank you, Taylor, for having me as part of this podcast, and it's a real honor to be here. I guess I can go all the way back to student worker time when I was in college at the University of Texas. I was a tour guide and an admissions student worker, and that's where I first learned about the field of student athlete services and some of those components in our building were the initial eligibility certification and continuing eligibility certification by admissions and registrar staff. And so I kind of learned a little bit about it, but didn't know that I would be going that direction in my career. And while pursuing a master's in sport management, I decided I needed to find something to mix my love of sports with working with students. Because I thought up till this point, I would say my favorite job I ever had was being a student worker at UT. So I needed to do something to help students in college and something with sports. And I found my way to, of all places, Texas A&M, where Steve McDonnell at the time was a director of student athlete services. And he was a speaker at a career forum for sport management students that I attended at A&M. I went up to him and asked him more about the profession, and he told me, you know, you should go to Nebraska. That's the best place to get experience as an intern. So I took his advice and sent my resume cold to Nebraska and ended up as an assistant counselor there. And that's how I got started in the field. So after 2 years at Nebraska, I ended up as an athletic academic advisor at UNLV. And while working in athletics, decided to pursue a PhD. And eventually couldn't balance the two in a good way where I needed to dedicate my attention. So I left athletics, went full-time to a doctoral program to finish, and then also picked up teaching on the side as an adjunct, and then discovered I actually like teaching. Somehow got all this stuff done and decided to pursue a faculty career. And now I believe I've been my dream job at Kansas State, and this is my eighth year at K-State teaching at that intersection of sport and higher ed that you talked about at the beginning.
Nice. So kind of full circle then, because it sounds like you started off thinking that you'd go maybe strictly into the higher education space and then wanted to blend some sport in, got all the way into athletics and then kind of, you know, came out, but still pretty adjacent to it. It's awesome. That is awesome. So why the interest or the continued interest maybe in, you know, athletic academic advisement, student athlete development, obviously being, on the faculty side, there's not anything that's necessarily requiring you to still have involvement within an organization like N4A, which is dedicated to those two spaces. So why the continued interest in that?
That's a really good question. I think from the moment I started in athletics, I felt that athletes were truly remarkable students in terms of how they had to navigate campus, balance two full-time roles, deal with limited time, and then so many other facets, like not having the ability to really engage with campus involvement or organizations, having no access to some of the services provided only during typical work hours, those sort of things. So that really helped me develop my interest in working with these students, but also after staying involved in N4A, that's an easy one just because I got involved. I don't know if I should say how long I've been a member, but it's been a while. And just the people in the profession are amazing. I've gotten so much from this professional development and networking through the organization. So I didn't want to separate myself from the organization, even though it focuses on the practitioner experience. And as I've seen it evolve over the years, such as when the NCAA partnered with N4A to make student athlete development training and professional development go through N4A, those are some of the things that intrigued me. And in my involvement in N4A, when I was a practitioner, I was co-chair of the formerly known as Life Skills Committee, which is now Student Athlete Development Programs and Practices. And then eventually I ended up as chair of the research committee while a faculty member. So I think some of those things kind of happened because of roles or because of interest. But what's really cool about the research side is that anybody could do it. Like practitioners should be doing it. They should be studying the work that they do and how their students experience college, because they're the ones who see it and observe it and work with it on a daily basis. I'm always concerned that someone who studies something that we, you know, read about and use may not have the actual knowledge or experience of working with athletes or talking to them even, or talking to someone who works with them. And that's why I think it's really important that people get involved. And I've seen over the years N4A encourage data-driven practices and research-based presentations. And I that's what excites me about that. In addition, as a faculty member, surprisingly, I do serve as an athletic advisor in a way, or I advise athletes as a faculty advisor who are in graduate programs and teach grad student athletes. And this semester happened to be teaching undergraduate student athletes. So I do still have connections with the students themselves. And then also I try to encourage the professionals in our Student Athlete Enhancement Center at Kansas State to write and publish as well, or work with me on things like grants, so we can support students too.
What do you think? So when NCAA and N4A partnered, when Life Skills became Student Athlete Development, now, of course, and I remember I was getting into N4A right at the time when that name change was about to happen. And I remember there being hearing from both sides. At the time, I was in academics where it was, no, we should definitely keep the acronym, even though it doesn't stand for, you know, the National Association for Athletic Academic Advisors anymore. Now student athlete development professionals are going to be involved. The student athlete development folks, of course, thought, no, we need a new thing. We need to like say that, you know, this is going to be a joint effort. The field, obviously, of student athlete development, student athlete enhancement has grown exponentially, right, in the last 5-6 years, I would say. What do you think is the next big thing that will happen, do you think, in general for the field? And then from maybe an organization standpoint, from a membership standpoint, do you think at any point it will make sense to separate those two fully out? Will we ever get to a point where we have enough student athlete development strictly professionals and strictly just academic professionals where we can make that split?
Those are some really good questions, Taylor. So to answer your first question, the next big thing is happening now, and I think that's this movement towards athlete branding and kind of owning their identity to pursue opportunities in name, image, and likeness contracts and ways to be entrepreneurial with their own self. And so that, just like all the other kind of things you mentioned with the last 5 or 6 years, first it was, oh, everyone has their own career specialist. Then it's everyone has their own leadership specialist. Now we have a community outreach guru, and then we're going to add this branding expert. So I feel like when I was in the field, I was lucky to find a standalone life skills coordinator position. Usually it was, here, you're going to advise 2 or 3 teams, and then on the side, do this, but we're not going to give you extra pay for it, of course. Now there's a specialist for everything, and there's more funding towards that. Before life skills and student athlete development took off, learning specialists blew up as the field and the thing. And, you know, we had to have 5 of those. There would, you know, a reading person and a math and a writing. And so I feel like, you know, athletics has that arms race with positions almost the same way they might have with locker rooms. And in this case, the NIL thing, I don't think is going away. And so that will be maybe a hybrid. It might be someone who's kind of dipped into compliance and student athlete development, or even marketing. I mean, there's some different ways to approach it, but I see that coming out of this type of area more in job postings now. And then leading to your next question, can you remind me?
It was a couple of big questions right in a row. So I asked if you think there will ever be a point where the membership of N4A would decide to split. So just to develop a student athlete development organization, and then to keep obviously N4A as the academic organization that it is.
Thank you for the reminder. So I do not at this point think they will split. I think there's a lot of synergy, even if the departments are separate at some institutions, they are together at others. And one thing that you see crossover is like some advisors do career advising and career development programming in their academic way. And some advisors run community outreach programs. And then student athlete development, there might be academic workshops. I mean, there's a lot of crossover at this point where I think that professional development wise, there's a lot of related content. And then you might see people go to the conference that they're currently an intern in an academic area, but want to pursue something that has student athlete development. Or as you know, many low resource institutions or like mid majors don't have the support staff to have two separate units. So they need like a one person show that can do a little bit of everything. And that has to require people to have the access to that professional development. So at this point, even though the N4A is the largest affiliate in NACDA, it's still a relatively small organization compared to other organizations that I'm involved in. So I think it can still maintain the scope of those areas together.
It's an interesting space because it's one of, and maybe this is just my limited scope of working in athletics. I've kind of dabbled in different spaces, but obviously have the most experience in academics and student athlete development. I can't think of another area in athletics where you might wear those two hats at once, right? And that are so so distinctly specific, where it is essentially facilitation and education and programming and then advisement, which is, there are of course things that cross over there, but they're two very separate. Whereas, you know, if you're in compliance, you're typically focused on the legal aspects of being a student athlete and kind of helping coaches and student athletes and everybody else stay within that legislation. If you're in marketing, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Development, the same thing. And so it's a unique space, I'm sure, that offers. And I'm sure you've seen over the years how it's kind of, you know, shifted and turned into what it is today.
It's amazing to see how it has evolved since when I began. I mean, because it's the same thing you could say about academic rules, though. I mean, they've changed since I've been involved many times, and it's fascinating to see, like, we're living history often as we study and examine college boards.
Yeah, that is very true. The academic eligibility stuff has definitely taken shape over the years. So the NIL, your mention of NIL and the fact that that's not going away anytime soon, which I definitely agree with. I think it's a lot of folks are flying by the seat of their pants right now, but also an aspect of living through history, right? That's definitely shaping the student athlete experience, shaping college athletics and what's next in that space, you know, kind of as we know it today. You did an interview, I believe with NBC, on NIL, on financial literacy. How did that come to be, and why was it important for you to speak on that topic?
That was a really interesting experience because initially I started doing research in this space without knowing NIL would happen. So financial literacy of athletes in college was the focus of the grant that I applied for with K-State Athletics and our Department of Personal Financial Planning at Kansas State back in 2018, which we received the NCAA Innovations in Research and Practice grant, which is a huge honor. And it was great to have a collaboration from different folks at K-State. We also collaborated with the University of Texas Center for Leadership in Athletics. So a group of us from both institutions started working on the aspects of the research for this grant, which we're trying to find out what interest athletes had in financial literacy. How would they like to receive information on financial literacy, and then some of their spending and budgeting habits. And through that research, you know, research is slow. And so that started, you know, a little bit behind because of some bureaucracy at one of the institutions. We didn't get to collect data until halfway through the year that we had from the NCAA to spend our money. Mm. And two of us presented at the NCAA convention in January 2019 and still hadn't finished collecting data. So the NCAA gave us an extension, which was very generous. And we ended up collecting more data from both institutions and kind of swapped some different people around on the team as people came and went. And what ended up happening was we were working on this manuscript, and as it was getting through the process, the NIL stuff started happening in different states. We knew it was happening, but, you know, now it got closer and closer to the start of many states' implementation in July 2021. And just so happened that our article, we could add in information about NIL. Luckily, we had an attorney as part of our team that had the kind of legalese to navigate through some of the state code for California, which was the beginning of it all. Mm-hmm. And then I roped in Julian Jones from K-State Athletics into giving us some information about what K-State was doing to support financial literacy for our athletes, because I know he was working on it as a new assistant AD. And so a team of us put together this article, which came out in July, just in time, I'd say, to address, like, this is really important that financial literacy becomes a part of student athlete development. And here's just another reason why. It obviously was important beforehand, but this is something now that more than ever, students need access to information because they are negotiating contracts. They are adding in income. There's implications for taxes. There's other things that they don't know. And they may not necessarily have some of the resources. Like, our institution has a peer financial counseling center. I doubt that's available everywhere, but can we get that word out and say, here's a resource that you can use that's confidential and you can talk to someone who's like you, another college student. So NBC happened to reach out to me. I guess they actually came across the NCAA report that was unfinished. And then I assured them we had more information to share. And so that's what led to that interview.
Nice. Very cool. What was some of the, you mentioned your research, some of it was focused on how do student athletes like to gain that knowledge on financial education, or how do they like to, you know, receive it or come across it or whatever. What were some of your findings there?
It was all over the place. So we thought there'd be one way, but I mean, some said, you know, send me text tips. Some said, you know, I'd like to go to a workshop, or give me a one-on-one professional counselor to meet with versus a peer counselor. And we thought there would be one or two ways that stood out, but that actually was not the case. So it really depends, I think, on a lot of things. Institution resources, you know, is there a sponsor? Like, K-State has Meritrust that comes in and helps do financial programming for athletes as part of their sponsorship deal. Is there something like that, or can you bring in, you know, an accountant to come speak to students? You know, can things come to the academic center? Like, can I bring a peer counseling team over to meet after hours during study hall time or whatever? You know, those are all going to have to depend on the institution. And that's where it's a little tricky to say, like, here's the way everybody can do it. But in our research, we were asked by the NCAA to find different options for all divisions, all resource levels. So we did provide a lot of different suggestions that could be cost-free or low cost in our paper. So I do recommend that everyone take a look at those. There's some free things, like the Visa and NFL have a game called Financial Football that people can play. And there's like different levels of financial knowledge you can choose to play the game. And there's some fun things like that. And then I just noticed, of course, last week the NCAA launched Invesco QQQ with the whole interactive format, which is a significant upgrade from here's some videos that you should watch, which is what we had before.
Yeah, for sure. Still some videos mixed in. I went through as a guest just to get a feel for what that platform was like. So still some videos mixed in, but definitely a very highly interactive platform, which is cool to see. So speaking of it being able to take your research and implement it in programming or in workshops or whatever it may be, you wrote a book, co-authored a book, I believe, that's called Implementing Student Athlete Programming. What prompted that? And maybe what are the one or two big takeaways from that book, or even in your process of writing that book, that you came across?
So that started with Christina Navarro. Dr. Navarro is an athletic director at Wisconsin-Platteville. And before, when we started this book, she was at Rutgers University as a senior athletic administrator. So Dr. Navarro just finished leading the Student Athlete Development Professional Development Institute, named after Steve McDonald, of course, with N4A. And she and I over the years have been on various boards. In AERA, she was the chair and I was on her board for the research focus on education and sport special interest group. So through N4A and other organizations, we had a lot of discussions over the years, and she's a well-published author as well and research on career development for athletes in other areas. So she was working on a book project with a colleague of hers, Dr. Jeff Mamaro, who's at Penn State in institutional research. And they invited me to join them to write this book because there was no text really at all in this space. Back in 1988, I think there was a book on counseling athletes, but it was really from a counselor education or counseling psychology background. And there just hasn't been anything else out there that has any sort of guidance for new professionals or people trying to reference some ideas. So we got together, and it's very, you know, it's a brief book. It's not super long to read, but it's got a variety of things, an overview of governance and different governing bodies and structures. So people may not know necessarily how Division I is governed and how that works. And so it kind of goes through those things. We discuss different things like HBCU institutions, how that might be different for those working in this space. We provide modeled programs. So we give an example in Divisions 1, 2, and 3 of academic or student athlete development programming that is successful and has some, you know, has been assessed and has some measurable outcomes and has shown to be a good proven model for how to do things. And then we provide some insights into how athletic programs can engage in strategic partnerships, maybe across campus and with donors to enhance their programming, maybe through fundraising. And also think about a look towards the future of the field, which, you know, we're talking about the nuance professions and titles and those sort of things, but also knowing that PDI is trying to standardize some terminology in the field. And that's obviously happening now. And that was in the works when we wrote the book. So I think that kind of developing a curriculum and a language that's shared across the field is helpful. And that's something that I use with a class that I teach. So future advisors, whether they work exclusively with student athletes or not, will have some just general knowledge and tools they can use to help students succeed.
Do you think that at any point there will be a set of, I guess standards is probably the best way to put it, for student athlete development on campuses? So you have to meet a minimum requirement and offer, you know, some level of education programming to your student athletes. I think, I mean, aside from NIL and what we're seeing from a legal standpoint in that space and what states have asked, you know, colleges and universities to do for student athletes who want to pursue that, what are your thoughts there? Do you think that's something that could not only be developed, but something that would, you know, be taken to heart?
I don't think it would be required anywhere to be a certain way, because even in academic support, there's not a requirement on how a university does it, just that they have it. So in terms of like N4A has program review for athletic support or athletic advising support, and those have consultants that come out and do site visits. I mean, that could be something that student athlete development does pretty easily in that same type of, I don't say mold, but model. But I don't know necessarily that it can be done the same way, just because I think back to the places that have the one person at the helm and they really cannot do it all and it's not their fault. So we want people to have, you know, enough staff to provide students all these different wonderful programs and all these extra things, but it's just not possible given the resource levels. And as pretty much everyone knows, like most athletic programs are not operating with profit. And so any extra money typically doesn't go trickle down back to academics or student athlete development, even when there's, you know, APR funds, you know, when institutions are awarded for APR. That money doesn't usually go back to academics, even if it's because of academics. So I feel that's going to hold up any sort of push in that direction beyond possibly including it in program review more. But that's just an opinion.
That makes sense. No, that makes sense. Okay, so I have one more question before we shift into kind of the final phase of the show, and that is your current research interest. So what's kind of the next, you know, big exciting thing that you're working on from a research standpoint?
Well, I am really excited about this, and I've talked to some folks about it on the research committee, but I can share, even though it's probably years away from being completed, that I have collected 22 years of what I'm calling lost literature in the field from Athletic Academic Journal, which is a former journal that the N4A published from 1985 to 2006. And then in 2006, N4A stopped publishing the journal. And most of this past year was reaching out to past presidents, folks who retired from the field, and word of mouth, ask your friends, and had people starting to ship me old journals from all over the country. Oh, during COVID last year, I was getting all these packages. Someone had photocopied everyone and sent me binders full of photocopies, and it was just fascinating. So I've compiled a lot of things to scan, and I have two students at K-State, one's a master's student and one is a doctoral student, who are scanning each one of these pages, and then we're making them accessible and searchable PDFs, and then working with our libraries to post all of this open access for anybody to see and read. Because one thing, I haven't had time to sit there and read over 100 articles, but what I can tell you is that people were researching learning specialist type work, career development, all sorts of things, leadership programs, everything that we think sort of just came out of the past 15 years, actually went back into probably before many of the people in the field were born. And it's not there for anyone to find because it was never digitized. So we're trying to get all this into an archive so people can see research in the field that happened before and build off of it, because unfortunately, all these authors haven't been able to get cited for their work because their work's not available. So this is a huge project, and hopefully we'll get it done before the end of 2022. That's a goal right now. And I also intend to read all of the articles and write kind of a big overview of the field's literature that was missing, so I can introduce people to it and lead them to want to read it.
That is a big project, but definitely an exciting one. And it sounds like a much needed one as well. So that's awesome. Okay, moving into the final phase of the show here. So the next question I have for you is after the show's namesake, the Bloom Pod. So what is one experience or maybe a series of experiences that you have had that you feel has helped you bloom into the person that you are today?
That's a really good question. I think for me, maybe more than experiences, it's likely mentors. I've had a lot of great mentors throughout the years, and I don't think without their support, I would be able to be successful today. So I'll give a couple of shout outs directly. So my first mentor that I think of in the field is Keith Zimmer. So now he's the top person. He's always been the top person to me in life skills. And yes, Nebraska still calls it life skills. But he's continued to be a high-level administrator for over three decades there. And I think first, that's unusual in athletics without turnover and such, that he's been there to develop a lot of people in the field and also to support students in so many unique, creative, and innovative ways. And also Melissa Dawson, who got assigned to me as my mentor through N4A a long time ago, just because we were near each other in states, I think, at the time. And we've stayed in touch for all these years and supported each other. And I know she was just interviewed by one of my students for my class. So I thank her for that as well.
Awesome. Mentors, definitely that ability to build a community, I think, is one of the biggest things in college athletics, really probably in anywhere, any aspect of life, but in college athletics has proved time and time again to be an invaluable thing. Okay, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever received?
I actually give this advice to my students, so I don't know who gave it to me. I'm sure I didn't come up with it, but I tell them, be yourself and you will always be in fashion.
Authenticity. I like it. I like it. Okay. Time now for the quick peel round. So I've got a couple of kind of this or that questions. And then of course a fill in the blank at the end. So the first one is, what is your favorite sport?
Gosh, I can't even be fast on that one. Well, I guess watching right now football
That's fair. You've got a nice background to back that up as well right now. If you could have any job in the world, money aside, everything else aside, what would it be?
Food taster.
Ooh, nice. That would definitely be a good one. If I had that job, I think I would also want that to be like calories aside. Calories don't exist. I just get to taste and eat whatever, whatever comes my way. Favorite musician or favorite musical group?
Man, that could be a whole hour conversation as well. I have way too many musical interests, I think, to answer that question.
Do you have a genre, like a go-to genre that you listen to?
I guess I'll just give it Depeche Mode.
Okay. All right. Okay. Next one is, if your name could be associated with one thing, what would it be?
Fun.
Nice. Okay. Last one. This is the fill in the blank. Blooming is.
I live by the motto, learning never goes out of style. So I think it's continuously learning.
I like it. Lifelong learning is a phrase that is used often in my family, specifically with my mom and my aunt. So I like that. I like that quote. Well, Dr. Rubin, thank you so much for joining me today and for talking about all things higher education and athletics and everything in between. It's been great to have you.
Thanks for having me. And I definitely need to work on my rapid response in the future.
We'll get them squared away for next time.
Stay tuned for the recap of this episode with my sidekick, Melissa Lutz.
Yo, that voice always scares me, and I wish that people could hear it on the recording, but they can't.
They can't, and I don't know why it scares you. It's a very nice recording in progress.
True. Maybe scares me is not the right word so much as it, whenever I hit it, I forget that she's going to speak. And then I think that someone in the meeting is speaking, but it's the lady.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Startles you.
Yeah.
Surprises you.
Surprises, I think. Yeah, that's the right one.
Okay.
That's the right one. Look at us kicking things off with English.
Yeah. I don't think we should include this by any means.
Okay. Well, all right then. Dr. Rubin, Dr. Lisa Rubin, you are pointing double guns, finger guns, arrows. There's a lot happening on this Zoom screen across from me.
I'm doing hand gestures to you speaking.
One may have guessed that you were conducting an invisible orchestra.
One may have. They would be wrong. I'm just conducting you. I guess that, you know, is a stretch, but...
Can you have a one-person orchestra?
I don't think we should get into Googling this early in the episode, but I want to say no.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm interested...
Performance with an instrument, you know?
Say it again.
That just sounds like a solo performance with an instrument.
True, not so much something that needs to be conducted.
Correct. I mean, you can conduct it, but I don't think that is the stipulation of being an orchestra.
True. Anyway, Dr. Lisa Rubin is our third and final higher education guest before we jump into our sports block next week. And what a guest she was. Very much knowledge, very much information.
Much wow, much no.
And I think that tells us all we need to know about my level of higher education.
We have to continue to learn as Dr. Rubin advised us to do.
Mm-hmm. Lifelong learning.
Not us specifically, but like I feel like maybe us specifically. We need to continue to learn.
Well, the one thing we do know is that we are the only ones who for sure listen to the episodes. So she definitely was talking to us. And my mom.
And your mom.
And my mom. Speaking of my mom, I do have, at the time that we're recording this, our middle higher education guest has not yet come out, Chris Everett. Of course, at the time that the episode is published, it will have been. But mom texted me about our first higher education guest, Jen Cross, and said that she would like to have coffee with her, that the interview was so interesting, and specifically that she wanted to have coffee with her, which is a very high compliment considering my mom does not drink coffee.
Oh, never asked to have coffee with me.
Yeah, I assume she would. She will probably now.
I know, but it's going to be a pity invite.
I have to imagine that my mom would love, specifically because you have a coffee shop. She would love to have coffee with you, but mostly only if you served iced tea.
I do serve iced tea.
Okay, then she would love it.
Okay, great. Kath, it's a date. You didn't agree to this, but it's on.
Be there or be square.
Be thirsty for iced tea.
Ask for Jen Cross, get Melissa.
And also, hey, that's my thing. I want to be friends with all our guests.
True. She didn't necessarily say friends, but I do think it's implied, you know.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Just kidding, Kathy can also be friends with all the guests.
My first note on Dr. Rubin was that it's really interesting to hear. It's been really interesting to hear, not just specific to her, but to everybody's background for the show. I think there's been a lot of people, obviously, that I know, and some coming up that I didn't previously know. And it's been nice to hear where they've been, hear how they got into what they're doing now. And for those that I did know, it's been a nice way to like fill the gaps.
So true. I feel like there's so many people in our lives that we feel like we know, but without a setting like this and sitting down and asking them the questions, like there's so much more. Mm-hmm. Everyone has so many stories and so much depth that, like, even if you've known them for a year and been friends, like, there's so much we don't know.
I also think another note that I had, it was a sub bullet on this bullet of my notes, was that all three guests in this higher education block that we just did have unique entries into their current area of higher education, right? Like, Jen started off in true higher education and then kind of made a pivot into the athletic space and the survey space and what she's doing now. Chris started off in athletics and has now made a move into higher, not marijuana related, but religious and church related education. And Dr. Rubin kind of started off kind of similar to how Jen did. And then, you know, kind of almost, I don't want to say she fell into teaching, but that was another note that I had, that it was like, you know, at some point I picked up this adjunct role and kind of fell in love with it. And now that's what I do.
It is interesting the way like we evolve and how actually common it is for people in our age group. I won't just say millennials. I saw on the internet that some people are calling it the Spice Girls generation, and that I love.
I saw that too.
I'm going to say us in the Spice Girls generation seem to jump around a little bit more and want to like experience different things. And that might not be generationally. It's just those are people that I, you know, am surrounded by. So, but veering from the traditional, like you stay in one job with one company and you climb the corporate ladder and you work your way to the top and that's what you do. Now it's getting more commonplace to like have these little interests that you're like, oh, I kind of want to try that for a bit. And then, oh, that piqued my interest. And I think I want to jump to that. And then, oh, I think I got out of this what I needed. And now my interests are over here. I think that's a lot more commonplace now than it was before. So it makes sense that all of them kind of like within the same realm jumped around a little bit. But I mean, like I started in marketing and then I was like, never mind coffee, you know, mm-hmm. Now I'm back in marketing, still doing coffee, but
I'm trying to think
for curious beings.
I want to come back to your comment about generational, but I was just trying to think through how many of our guests made like a massive jump to something different, not necessarily from like academics to athletics or vice versa, but I guess similar to Chris, you know, that's kind of a big, I don't want to say unusual, but there's not like a clear connector there between those two jobs. Like
NFL to cookies.
Yes. Like NFL to cookies. Or
so maybe we should tell the listeners who haven't listened to that episode that previous guests we've had were, I'm queuing you up.
Oh, I thought you were, I don't even know what I thought you were doing. Our previous guests, if you've not listened to that episode, were Jeff and Marissa Allen. Jeff played in the NFL, and Marissa, his wife, has an advertising background and also likes to cook. And now they have a cookie business, hence football.
Very successful cookie business.
Very much so. Oprah's Favorite Things. Rachel Ray has featured them, et cetera, et cetera. We've had a lot of like season three guests and journeys, and just the conversations we're having have been really interesting.
Agreed.
Which I suppose is the hope of a podcast.
That is the goal here.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Okay. I said, I want to come back to the generational thing because I do think there is a generational aspect to the job thing where the Spice Girls generation, those of us in the Spice Girls generation, you know, I don't want to say like bored is not the right term, but I think it's this like general sense of like unrest and like wanting to break the circle, not recreate the wheel, but not just be a cog in a machine. How many analogies can I throw into one sentence?
I don't know, but you're doing great. You're on a roll here to fit in with your circle, wheel, cog theme.
Yeah.
I honestly think it's like, it's yes. Not wanting to feel like a cog in a machine. And also just like, I think society has really opened up anyways, it's become more accepted to kind of like try different things out and follow your passions and follow your interests. And at our core, we're curious beings and mm-hmm. we want to keep learning, like Dr. Rubin said, and try new things and experience different experiences. And now it's become like less of a faux pas, like it's more accepted to be like, okay, I'm going to make this jump and try something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to start this little side hustle and see if I can grow it. And when it gets big enough, I'm going to jump to that. And when that is kind of thriving on its own, I'm going to probably be curious about something else. And I love that. Rather than just like I said, the expectation of you stay with one company to pay your bills. Even if you don't like it, you grow with the company and work your way up.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say something and I just lost it.
Oh, well, while you're thinking about it, which is your favorite Spice Girl?
Okay. Don't judge me.
Judging you already. Just kidding.
Oh,
they're all great.
I'm inclined to say Sporty Spice because I was a tomboy. You know, I heard the other day you're not supposed to say that anymore, but I don't know what the acceptable term is. But I was a tomboy growing up. And because of that, I didn't even listen to the Spice Girls that much until I got to college and knew you guys. Like I knew the basics, but I'm a little fuzzy on full Spice. Now, Posh, I've gotten to know in my adult years.
Personally?
Yes, she is on the couch right now. just kidding. I do not know Posh Spice, just to clarify.
We gathered, Taylor. I didn't know why I was going to be judging you when you said Sporty Spice, because that is
That's not the judgment.
I know. And then you said you didn't really listen to Spice Girls. And I was like, yeah. Oh, there it is. Cause Sporty Spice is great.
I was heavy into NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys, and specifically Nick Carter.
I was a Brian Littrell guy. Gal.
Person thing. Were you?
Yeah.
You know who else I liked?
So sweet. He has holes in his heart. And I don't know why that. Yeah.
Oh. Is he doing all right?
I haven't checked in with him recently. He's not on the couch, Taylor. I hope so, though. Hope you're doing well, Brian Littrell. I had posters of you all over my bedroom.
I also really liked, I don't want to say I really liked them, but I liked also in that era, 98 Degrees.
Sure.
Nick Lachey specifically. And then
Drew Lachey was also great.
Yeah. Totally underrated. Yep. He was underrated. Do you remember the band Five?
Nope.
Slam Dunk the Funk.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You may be getting off track here, Taylor.
Slightly. I really like Five though, but I don't know anybody individually from their band. Cause they also used to sing that song. Baby, when the lights go out. I don't know the rest of it. And I won't continue to sing it. We can go back to what we were talking about, but I just wanted to make mention of Five.
Yeah. Where are they now?
What you waiting for? 3, 3, 2, 2, 1. Anyway,
on the podcast, see what
that would be fun. What was the name? Wasn't there a band called like O Town or something that was like
O Town, Dream Street?
Interesting. We should try and get like the one hit wonders of our generation. How did we get here? Do you know how we got here?
How's LFO doing?
Ah, true. I really want to sing now. We have to get back to our topic.
I know. Maybe we can have a post-show dance party over Zoom.
True, we could. Okay, I'm going to hit you with 3 bullets in a row here. These are the last few notes that I have. Number one, she talked about the amazing people in N4A. We did an N4A episode. We've had several of their leaders on or part of the show in some capacity. And it's neat to me that continues to get brought up, that N4A has been such an instrumental part of so many of my colleagues' journeys.
That is pretty neat. It seems like I obviously am not involved in N4A, but it seems like you've met a really good group of people and built a really awesome network of resources, mentors, friends through being involved in that.
It could be your grocery store conference. You remember we talked about that?
I vaguely remember.
My mom had a friend who, I don't even know what her actual line of work was, but she attended a grocery store conference and then took back ideas to her own business. The conference.
Oh, I could just go learn from N4A and then apply it to my yes. own industry for your thing.
Most of it, I don't know that there would be anything you could pull, as most of it is discussions on working with students.
I work with a team of
people. Maybe some of it would be applicable. I would be interested to have you attend and get your opinion. The conference is in Vegas next summer. So maybe you should just do it.
I just see Bear's tail wagging behind you. Okay, I've done Vegas once and I've said to myself, I don't need to go back. But you know what? I could be a cabana lady lounging poolside.
Well, you'd go for the conference, so you could like cabana sometimes.
I wouldn't have time to lounge poolside.
I suppose you'd have some time. Bear has awakened, obviously, as you saw by his tail.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking through this. I'm interested, but I was anticipating more pool lounging time.
We can discuss at a later date. There are, I do feel like, a handful of professionals who attend specifically when it's in a place like, you know, Orlando, that there are some folks who come down specifically for the weather and the pool and cabanas and such.
I don't want to give that reputation and make people think I'm just there to take advantage of the location and weather of their conference. That was not a well-crafted sentence, but the gist came across. Yes.
Yes. I don't know if you'd technically be taking advantage since you're not in our field, you know, it would be like you're getting the best of both worlds.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah. You really know how to sell a conference, put a good spin on things.
That's what I'm here for.
Is it?
I don't know. Sometimes.
Conference sales lady?
Conference sales lady? Okay, the second to last note that I have, which I kind of already touched on, that she like kind of accidentally got into teaching, that she just, you know, kind of got an adjunct role or was handed an adjunct role. I don't want to say it that way, but it was like as kind of like an other duty as assigned, like, hey, can you teach this course? And then she fell in love with it. Of course, that's what she's heavily doing these days. And I couldn't help but think, especially as I was listening back to the interview before we hopped on, that I would love it if that would happen to me.
That you fell in love with teaching?
That someone would be like, hey, gosh, this might put you out, but would you teach this class?
And you would love that?
Mm-hmm. I would thoroughly enjoy it.
Thoroughly.
Unless they asked me to teach like engineering or physics or something, and then I don't.
Hey, I don't mean to offend you, but no, I don't think anyone's going to ask you to teach engineering or physics.
You have not offended me.
No one is asking me.
You have not offended me in the slightest. okay, and then the last note that I have was that it's just crazy to think how young the field of student athlete development still is. I can remember when she was talking about, you know, that learning specialists, before student athlete kind of blew up, that learning specialists were a big deal and everybody wanted to have a learning specialist. And then it was a career specialist, then it was a leadership specialist, and then community and all this kind of stuff has come along. And I was thinking back to my first true internship, my first paid working experience in academics. And we had a learning specialist, but the person who was doing, at that time, life skills, student athlete development work was doing it as kind of an other duty, like an academic advisor first, but then, you know, when you get time, if you get time, think about this other stuff. So, and that was 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, that's super recent.
Super recent. Wild, one might say.
I also thought it was super interesting, the project that she's working on now of compiling like old research that was not digitized.
Yes.
And it got me thinking, like, how much research exists in the world that we don't know about from like before computers, before technology was advanced enough for it to be like a widely shared article, whatever. How much research are we spending time redoing that
right.
already exists in the world across any industry? Like, it's wild to think about that there's like hundreds of years of data and numbers and research that she's compiling just in one field.
Right. It is insane. I have to wonder, I mean, from my own research standpoint, what she maybe has already come across that would be useful to me as a future PhD, as a PhD candidate, I can now officially say it myself.
Yeah.
I wish I just was a PhD. I'll be eager for the process to come to a close and be approved.
Soon, Taylor.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
Now I want to go like excavating for research.
Like mining for data, as they say.
Yeah. Oh, I liked excavating, but
I did too.
Yours is probably more clear on what you're doing.
Yeah, it's kind of the same.
Makes me feel like Ross Geller.
Yeah, true.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, he was kind of cool sometimes.
He was mostly cool.
Mm-hmm. I think he was.
He is a neat guy.
I too am a neat guy. I have to think that at times he was under valued by his friend group because he was, you know, super into paleontology.
Yeah, I think across the board, he got a little undervalued and made fun of. He's a funny guy.
Yeah, funny guy. Anyway, that was the last of my notes, my dear.
Yeah, I think that covered most of what I have, other than, you know, we discussed this before jumping on to record, but the Dr. Navarro, Dr. Nefario mix up in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
To clue you listeners in, if anyone's seen Despicable Me, Dr. Nefario is a character on there. I don't know if that came into any of your brains when Dr. Rubin mentioned her name.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was funny. I have nothing noteworthy to say about it other than it made me think of a movie I love.
I did not think that as she was talking, as I know Dr. Navarro, but as soon as you started to say it before we started recording, I somehow knew that you were going to talk about Despicable Me.
It's a great movie. I find it any chance I can take to talk about it.
As you should. As you should. All right. Shall we close this thing out?
Wrap this old thing up.
Mm-hmm. Put a bow on it.
Put a bow on it. Lock it up. Okay. Here I go. And that's the way the onion peels.
We will see you next week. We are thrilled. As I mentioned at the beginning of this, we're going to be kicking off our sports block, our final block of season 3. So we've got 3 more guests to go before we take another hiatus, hopefully not an 8-month hiatus next time. Question mark, Melissa, looking at you. Anyway, and she's looking off into the distance. Anyway, we're so excited to introduce you to the next 3 guests. Really, I'm pretty fired up about all 3 of them. So we'll see you then. We're excited. Cheers.